From NPR, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Chuy Casares and his cousin Jose Luján grew up in the little town of Alviso, California, and they never plan to leave. They've got the tattoos to prove it.
This is my tattoo of my hometown, Alviso.
It's big, chest, two-inch, three-inch letters.
Right there, Alviso.
No, we can't forget where we're from. No, never.
But climate change might alter their plans as coastal towns like Alviso are threatened with more and more flooding.
With the global warming and the waters rising, it's kind of frightening to think, oh my God, it's, you know.
We'll have to get a boat or something.
Big boat. Noah's Ark.
We'll have a house boat.
That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, but first, this news update. In this presidential election year, who gets to vote can decide not just the race, but whose will is reflected in the winning votes. Voter ID laws being enacted in several states could make it harder for younger, minority, and low-income voters to cast their ballots. Stephen Carbo is the Senior Program Director in the Democracy Program at DEMOS. He joins us to talk more about how these new laws could affect Latino voters in the upcoming presidential elections. Welcome to Latino USA, Stephen.
My pleasure.
So this year alone, there are voter ID legislation basically pending in 32 states. 14 of them have proposed new voter ID laws. 10 states proposed even more stringent laws. So what's driving these states to putting these new measures just months before the general election?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a partisan power grab. You're seeing, you know, after the 2010 midterm elections, we had conservatives take control of a lot of state capitals around the country. And since then, over the past 15 months, you've seen a profusion of proposals to have the effect of suppressing the vote. Strict voter ID requirements, restrictions on community voter registration drives, a number of efforts. While maybe 11% of Americans don't have driver's licenses, you have much higher percentages, as you mentioned, of Latinos, African Americans, young people, low-income individuals who don't have driver's licenses. Just recently, the Justice Department blocked Texas for putting into effect its new strict photo ID requirement. And by that state's own estimate, there were 600,000 registered voters, this is people who are on the voter rolls, who don't have a driver's license and therefore could be blocked from voting. But the number was much higher for Latinos. So Latinos would be 47 to 120% more likely than whites not to have the driver's license that the state wanted to require for voting.
So legislators in favor of these tougher ID laws basically say that the current voting systems are susceptible to a tremendous amount of voter fraud. So how real is the threat of voter fraud? Do we have people basically, you know, you hear these stories about dead people voting or people voting two or three times. How often is that happening in the United States?
Well, your chances of getting hit by lightning are higher than the instances of voter impersonation at the polls. And remember, the only kind of voter fraud that we can prevent with these voter ID requirements is that you showing up at the poll and trying to vote in someone else's name. And all the studies show that it's extremely rare. It just doesn't happen.
Why is this being talked about if the instances are so rare?
Well, I think because it's a smokescreen. Many Americans actually think that we have voter fraud in our system, and whereas, you know, they have vivid memories of Chicago 100 years ago, but that's not the United States today. So there's a public misperceptions about voter fraud, and these policymakers are using that misperception to drive an agenda, which is to suppress the vote.
So what are some areas that need fixing to protect people of color, to protect the poor and the young from being disenfranchised?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, we need to continue to fight against these legislative proposals. And your listeners in North Carolina, for instance, should be aware that there's a bill still in play in North Carolina to enact a strict voter ID requirement. When people are doing voter mobilization drives, they need to be also telling individuals if there's new photo ID requirements, what they are, how you get them. Provide help with getting the free ID where that's provided for. My organization, DEMOS, we're coming out with a report on that issue later in April. And then we've got to improve our voter election system. You know, we've got a voter registration model that was developed in the 19th century. And with technology today, we can make sure that you know, the 51 million Americans who are eligible to vote but aren't on the rolls, we can get them on the rolls through automatic registration, through reforms like same-day registration, which 9 states allow, and you can register and vote on Election Day. We've got to implement the law which requires voter registration opportunities be available at social service agencies, which is another project we've been involved in. And we've helped a million eligible citizens get registered through that effort in just a handful of states over a couple of years. We have to fight against these bad measures, which are groundless, and then we've got to refocus attention on the real issues in our elections and improve them.
All right, Stephen. Well, thanks for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
Stephen Carbo is the Senior Program Director in the Democracy Program at Demos. He spoke to us from New York. For news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter. We are LatinoUSA, all one word, and we're back in 30 seconds. That's 30 segundos. Stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Sitting at the edge of the San Francisco Bay, Alviso, California is a small town with a rich Latino heritage. It's one of the many spots around the country threatened by more and more flooding due to climate change. Chuy Cáceres lives in Alviso with his large, extended Mexican-American family. They've made a good life here, but over the next few decades, sea level rise and big storms brought on by climate change could wash this town away. Around the San Francisco Bay, plans are being made to protect coastal towns. But adapting to climate change will not help everyone equally and may even hurt people of color. Chuy Cáceres is caught precisely in this bind. Claire Schoen has our story.
Along the shores of the San Francisco Bay, flooding brought on by climate change, is threatening communities built along the water. Alviso, a tiny hamlet at the southern tip of the bay, is one of them.
Go! Go!
Chuy Cáceres has lived here all of his 21 years. Alviso is legally part of San Jose, further to the south, but it is a world apart from that bustling city.
Yeah, well, this is it. This is basically where I hang out right here. Walk around, take my dogs out, enjoying everybody around here.
Alviso's history has been defined by its relationship to the bay's waters, the wetlands encircling it, the creeks running down from the hills behind it, the groundwater sinking below it.
Yeah, the parks back there, the school. We used to go to school back there, George Main Elementary. And that's the church right there. It's a Catholic church. I tried to go there and this is a taco de oro restaurant. That's the truck. Right there, the truck.
Two carne asada plain and one carne asada burrito with just rice, cheese, and meat.
Taco de oro's been here for a while, and everybody likes it. You know, it's the closest thing to us. You know,
as climate change causes sea level rise and increasingly erratic weather, the waters around Alviso will change the lives of Chuy and his whole family.
Right now we're on Essex Street, walking towards my grandma's house. Mostly everybody here is Chicano, you know, Hispanic. And we're all somehow connected, you know, by marriage or by blood. And if we're not, you know, like my friends and my neighbors, they're like family to me. I love it here. It's like my paradise right here.
A tour of Alviso would not be complete without visiting the disaster alarm bell.
It's that big old bell up there. Yeah, right here when there's like a flood or earthquake, you know, it rings really loud. And once we hear that bell, then that's when we know something's happening. We got to get as much stuff as we can together and leave. But sometimes they test it just to make sure it's working, and it's pretty loud.
Flooding has always been a problem for Alviso. But with climate change, flooding may become catastrophic for for this town at the edge of the water.
Well, this is my grandma's house. Grew up here. Just a lot of memories here.
Come on in, have a seat.
You guys in town everything already?
This is my cousin, Jose Lujan.
I was born and raised here in Alviso. And this gentleman here is my cousin, but he's like a brother.
What's your perspective?
I mean, you always want to talk about your town.
Well, I do know that the San Francisco Bay Area is going to be affected by the global warming and how the melting of the polar ice cap and whatnot. And one of the places is Alviso. We'll be one of the first places that the water will rise, you know, and we'll be basically underwater. So, because it's already melting within the last past 10 years, you know, it's already risen a little bit. So within the next like 10, 15 years, that's when all this water will be melted.
We're below sea level here, so there's always the threat of floods. And with the global warming and the waters rising, it's kind of frightening to think that, you know, oh my God, are the waters going to rise? And
so basically, they'd have to move schools and businesses and all kinds of stuff away from the peninsula and the South Bay and whatnot.
It's not just Alviso that's threatened.
Many places in Silicon Valley are definitely at risk of flooding. Yahoo, Google, NASA Ames Research Center. There's also the city of Palo Alto's water treatment facility and the city of San Jose's water treatment facility.
That's Mendel Stewart. He's manager of the National Wildlife Refuge right next to Alviso. He helped us understand why Alviso and all of the South Bay is at such high risk for flooding in the face of climate change.
Many of the communities, particularly in the south end of San Francisco Bay, along the peninsula, have subsided below sea level. They've sunk maybe a few inches to a few feet to multiple feet below sea level.
Alviso, 12 feet below sea level.
This occurred in the late 1800s as the groundwater was starting to be pumped out.
They were using the groundwater to irrigate orchards and farms.
At the same time this groundwater was being pumped out, there was also destruction of the salt marshes.
And here's the second part of the problem.
At one time in South San Francisco Bay, there were thousands of acres of salt marsh converted to salt making.
The old marsh protected this coastline. It had sloughs meandering through it, allowing runoff from rivers above to fan out and sink into the ground.
Today, channels have been straightened and ditched to the point where the water flows straight into the bay, contained within these narrow channels.
And in heavy rains, the channels back up and flood the town. Climate change will bring bigger rains, making this flooding much worse. It will also bring flooding from the bay as sea level rises and storms increase.
We have built our communities in places where we shouldn't have built them in the first place. And we changed the natural environment to accommodate our communities. And frankly, we're stuck with them.
We're waiting for my mom. She's cleaning up a little bit. She's the one that lives in this house and went through, you know, a lot of trauma and everything.
Chewy's family is well aware of the devastation that flooding can bring to this town. They've lived here for generations. Chewy's grandma comes into the living room, where she's joined by other family members.
Ma, siéntate aquí, ama.
Yo nací en México, en Ciudad Acuña, Coahuila, frontera con del río Texas.
It's a border state with Texas, so that's where our family comes from.
But today, Chewy's family must make up half of the town of Alviso. They bought land here when much of the area was covered in orchards and farms.
At $5 an acre.
Nobody wanted to live here, and land was going cheap because of the floods.
The last big flood in 83 may be a precursor of much bigger things to come.
Pues fue algo muy desastroso.
It's a very disastrous thing.
Estaba como, ¿cuántos pies estaba el agua adentro de la casa?
In that time, that in 1983, the floodwaters came in like 6 feet inside the house.
It had been raining for a few days, and I had my two eldest sons, 3 years old and 5 years old. And I heard the sirens were going out, and water was already coming right into town. It was coming. So I got my kids, and I got some blankets, and I got their clothes, and I jumped in the car. The only thing I forgot was my dog. He drowned. So, you know, everybody was doing the same thing. Everyone in town was doing the same thing. Everybody was evacuating. Everyone.
Era demasiada agua.
We were not allowed to come into town because it was contaminated, the water with rats and snakes and dead dogs and dead animals and things like that. The sewer. So it was bad.
No single weather event can be tied to climate change, but a pattern of increasingly severe storms and floods is now clear. And stories like this one are becoming more and more common.
Y luego dieron una orden de que no, que tiráramos todo, sacáramos todo a la calle.
¿Qué más hay?
Letter saying that they had to get all their furniture and all their stuff and put it out into the street.
Porque estaba todo contaminado por las aguas.
Because it was all contaminated and from all the water and stuff.
Everything had to be thrown away. Yeah, into the street.
It's difficult to talk about.
It is.
Yeah.
For me, I lost a lot of my memories. Like my kids' pictures, baby pictures. And my wedding pictures, and just things I had. I don't have anything anymore. I think that's what hurt me.
She was in a, some kind of depression.
I had that depression for a long, long time.
The threat of more and bigger floods is always on their minds.
No. Are we going to flood or are we?
We can't predict the future, but...
Yeah, it'll probably happen again. That water's strong. When it comes, it comes.
We'll have to get a boat or something.
A big boat. A houseboat. Noah's Ark.
We'll have a houseboat.
Fear and yet resignation. They seem to go hand in hand.
We're thinking about the now and what we're enjoying right now. So, like, we're living in the moment. And I guess if a disaster comes, then I guess we're going to deal with it at that time or something. You know, I know it sounds kind of strange, but...
we just live with it, you know, we just...
Leaving Alviso is not an option. Chewy and Jose's loyalty to their town is written all over them.
It's my tattoo. It says Alviso on it. There's a cross on the bottom right under it, just to know that God's watching over my town. And so I will never forget where I was from, where I was born and raised. I have it right there so I can see it every day, know where I'm from.
There's a lot of kids in town that have the Alviso tattoos. They love this town.
He loves it so much. Look at
this. Is my tattoo of my hometown, Alviso.
Tattooed. Yeah, it's big, yeah, across his chest.
Yeah, it's all the
two
way.
Inch, 3 inch letters.
Right there, Alviso.
No, we can't forget where we're from. No, never.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always wanted it since I was a kid.
Some even younger kids have Alviso tattooed on them.
It's a cultural thing. I accept it.
Kind of tripped out at first.
Yeah, yeah.
She kind of was mad for a little bit, but then she went along with it.
Well, I was more upset about him having a girl's name tattooed.
Which was a mistake. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
It was. I just want to add that.
By the time you come back, the food should be ready.
Inertia in the face of likely disaster. It all sounds very familiar. But in Alviso, someone is tackling the problem of flooding, and it might just save their town.
In a minute, a solution to Alviso's flooding problem with a surprising twist.
It's all about money, you know? I mean, that's just the way society is, you know? It's all about money.
That's coming up. No se vayan. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Alviso, California, is threatened with flooding due to climate change, but efforts are underway to protect this little town at the edge of the San Francisco Bay. Claire Schoen continues with our story.
One way to protect Alviso is by restoring the old wetlands. Mendel Stewart and his team at the Don Edwards National Wildlife Refuge are attempting to do just that.
Well, I've got a government vehicle, so I can take four other people.
That's Laura Valopi. She's the lead scientist on the wetlands restoration project in the South Bay, which includes Pond A8.
We're going to Pond A8, which is, well, we'll describe when we get there. It's probably the better thing to describe when we get there.
Pond A8 sits right next to the town of Alviso.
I go straight and then left, is that
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Laura's here with Mendel Stewart.
This way would probably be shorter, and then we could walk up on the levee. We're standing at the southwest corner of Pond A8 at the big water control structure we call the Notch.
This is not the idyllic scene that I was expecting. It's more like a construction site for a shopping mall.
It's about 40 feet across. It's made of massive concrete, and it's going to have these big drop log structures, these aluminum gates that we can drop in and out to control the water.
We're not restoring this completely to tidal marsh yet. There's going to be a notch which will bring water from Alviso Slough into Pond A8 and then A5 and A7. Or actually, did I get that right? No, it's going in at the top of A5, A7 and then out.
It's coming in and out at Alviso Slough.
Well, whether it's going in or going out, the point is they have to manage the water's flow. They're worried that if they just open up the old salt pond and let the water spread out, they may cause more problems than they solve. For example, stirring up mercury left over from old mining operations. Yikes!
Riprap, it's a rock to stabilize banks around the construction project.
While the process may be somewhat industrial, the end goal is to make a lovely living border between bay and land.
Well, what's going to happen? You're going to start with this white, salty crust.
That's John Bourgeois. He's executive project manager for all of the wetlands restoration in the South Bay.
And then the sediment's going to come in, and we're going to have probably, you know, 2, 5, 10 years worth of just vast mudflats.
As sediment keeps coming in with the tides and building up, the mudflats will get bigger and bigger.
And when we hit the right elevation, pop, we're going to see little sprigs of pickleweed here and there, cordgrass and gum plant, and then eventually, hopefully, it'll just be a sea of lush green marsh vegetation.
What stage are you guys at?
I'm putting in the stop logs this week, and hopefully next week we'll be breaching the pool. And
next week, huh? Fantastic.
We're close.
It just gives me like goosebumps to think we got all this stuff going on. It's happening.
And it's going to be providing flood protection for 3 or 4 million people in this area.
How will restoring the wetlands around Alviso keep back the big floods coming with climate change? Mendel Stewart explained that as winter storms become more fierce and more frequent, wetlands can help slow down the water rushing downstream.
So as runoff from upland areas flow into a wetland, they would flow through a series of small tributaries that would meander through the wetland, and they would naturally slow the movement of that water, which allowed the water to be absorbed and actually go into the groundwater.
Wetlands can also help with the other flood risk from the bay itself as sea levels rise, bringing higher tides and higher waves.
Historically, the wetlands were there to act as a buffer from tidal flooding.
Wetlands won't solve the problem by themselves. They also need levees.
By having this buffer out in front of these levees, you also reduce the height and therefore the cost of the construction of those levees.
So saving Alviso with wetlands seems like a good idea, but the solution may be bittersweet for Chewy's family. Just who is Alviso being saved for?
Most of these houses here, like this is like old Alviso. This is, you know, this is my Alviso right here. It's like some people will say it's like being like in a little town in Mexico and stuff. And we just, everybody knows each other. Everybody says hi to each other. Yeah, it's nice.
But it's the flood risk that has kept property values low in Alviso. Now that the risk is being dealt with, Land that was $5 an acre when Chewy's family settled is becoming prime waterfront real estate.
Then where the new houses are, that's like new Alviso. They're just all the new big two-story houses. They're nice, but they make them too expensive for us, you know, if we wanted to buy one.
Chewy's afraid that he will never be able to afford to buy a house in his own town, that his generation is being pushed out. Sitting in an office across the bay, Mendel Stewart acknowledges this reality.
Well, Alviso, like any community, has families, people that live there, businesses that have been built. They want their community to stay like it is. They don't want to see it, gentrified.
Hope they don't try to push us out. It's because everybody grew up here, everybody's from around here, and they just came and ruined everything.
City of San Jose, that's why they annexed it, probably, because it's waterfront property, and they wanted to be connected to the bay. And the community of Alviso was in their way, still in their way.
There's nothing we can do about it. I mean, we just fight it. Yeah. And do what we got to do, stick together as a community and as a family. We just got to stick together, help each other out.
Gentrification, probably is. It's all about economics. Those are really the issues.
I pretty much like it the way it is. And if it could stay the way it is, then when my kids are born and stuff, I'm pretty sure they'll love it too.
I didn't know you were going to follow me over here.
What would you like, some watermelon or some cake?
In this kitchen, the wetlands restoration is an ongoing topic of conversation.
There's a lot of restoration going on over here because...
we never thought anybody would ever come and give a crap about Alviso,
We're going to be surrounded by buildings, and the little village, the true Alviso here, with long-standing families, it might get crunched up. So that's why
it's all about money, because now there's all these people, they come around and they're scouting for land to buy and houses and whatnot. And I don't know. I mean, that's just the way society is, It's all about money. I don't know. We like our little neighborhood, but...
We like the way it is. We don't want it to change.
Adapting to climate change will change our lives. And for some families, it may be a messy and painful business.
It's done. Food is done.
This is homemade food here.
Yeah. You have a lot of time.
Okay, Grandma.
Está muy sabroso, Lupe.
Okay.
For Latino USA, I'm Claire Schoen, Alviso, California.
And for this week, that's Latino USA. Our program was produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Tina Rubio, Andres Caballero, and Michael Jones. We had help from Neil Rausch. For a slideshow of Chewy's family, visit our website at latinousa.org. Latino USA is part of the Futuro Media Group, based in Harlem, producing public radio and television for the world to hear and see. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. This is NPR.